Thank you for the introduction and for the audience for choosing to spend the afternoon with us. I have no disclosures to present, and in order to put our study in context, I'm going to present quite a bit of background so that you can understand how our study fits into the bigger picture. Every year, the U.S. admits a lot of refugees / asylees. I'm going to lump them all together and just call them refugees for the purpose of this presentation. And they range anywhere between 50, 60, 70, even up to 100,000 per year, depending on the year. California alone sees about 6,000 to 11,000 of these refugees. And what's important about this population is that they have unique medical needs. Many surveys in the past have shown that this population has a high number of intestinal parasites. And the reason this is important is because parasites can have long-term consequences in health. For example, hookworm, among many helminths, can cause anemia in children due to iron loss, and also physical and mental growth retardation. Other complications include rectal prolapse, which is seen with whipworm, hyperinfection with strongyloides, and subsequent tissue damage in the lungs, including severe inflammation. And in the case of chronic schistosomiasis, patients can develop cirrhosis, liver cancer, renal failure, or bladder cancer, depending on the species. So a cost-effectiveness study in 1999 basically evaluated the high prevalence of infections and determined that presumptive treatment of these infections overseas, instead of watchful waiting, for example, could actually save $4.2 million a year. This is a large sum. And as a result, based on these findings, in 1999, the CDC recommended overseas presumptive treatment for helminths and protozoa in areas of sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia with a single dose of albendazole, which really treats helminths the best. Subsequent studies, including a work from our lab, show that after those recommendations were in place, the prevalence of intestinal parasites, both helminths and protozoa, which are not well covered with albendazole, both types of infections actually decreased. And that was very reassuring. In fact, for us, we found that the rate of infections had dropped from about 30% or so down to 14%, so less than half. The CDC recommendations were recently reevaluated, however, because of the concern of the two most important infections that cause the greatest morbidity and mortality in the refugee population, and these are Schistosoma species and Strongyloides. The concerns were, one, that the treatment with the presumptive treatment with albendazole offered incomplete coverage for Strongyloides, and there was no treatment at all for Schistosomiasis. And the second concern was that stool, ova, and parasite examinations, which are routinely done to test for these infections, are not greatly sensitive. And this probably leads to an underdiagnosis of Strongyloides and Schistosomiasis. Hence, in 2008, the CDC first proposed new recommendations in basically the Middle East, South, and Southeast Asia that recommended adding ivermectin to the single dose of albendazole. In Africa, they recommended praziquantel in addition to albendazole and ivermectin, and this was specifically to target Schistosomiasis, which is endemic in all of Africa. An exception was made in countries in sub-Saharan Africa where Loa Loa is endemic. The organism that causes this is Onchocerca, and when you treat a patient with ivermectin, the high parasite load in some patients leads to lots of worms dying and releasing antigens that can cause severe inflammation and can lead to encephalopathy. So as a result, they recommended in these countries to omit ivermectin and just lengthen the duration of albendazole. So our study objectives for these changes in recommendations were to profile the intestinal parasites in recent refugees in Santa Clara County, California. We're located approximately an hour south of San Francisco, for those of you who don't know where we are. We wanted to also compare the prevalence of current infections with our previous findings back in 2001-2004. Our methods, let me actually just take a moment now that I'm going to break the rules a little bit and say that since we published our abstract, we received a more complete data set of all the refugees for our study period, so the data that I'm going to be presenting is a little bit different from what we reported in the abstract. With regards to the methods, we obtained de-identified data for all the refugees that came through our county from June 1st, 2008 to November 30th, 2010. These individuals were referred to the Refugee Health Assessment Program to basically establish initial care with a physician and hopefully plug them into a system. And this hopefully takes place 90 days after arrival. As part of this evaluation, they're also submitted to 3 stool examinations for ova and parasites. We abstracted the data, age, sex, country of birth, as well as the results of the ova and parasites, focusing only on pathogens. In addition, we also conducted a subset study, and this is what we actually reported in our abstract. In this subset study, we wanted to look at Strongyloides and Schistosoma serology, which are antibody tests. And because of the need for informed consent, we were limited somewhat by language criteria. We needed to have a witness who spoke English, Arabic, Farsi, Chinese, Vietnamese, Burmese, or Spanish, or basically what we could find. In addition to the translator, which we can have almost any language through phone translation, but we actually need a witness in the room, and so we were limited to these languages. Also, we limited to adults ages 18 through 55 and healthy individuals. So basically, just to clarify the 2 cohorts, the first cohort consisted of 1,392 people, basically 98% of all the individuals who came through our county who had at least 2 out of the 3 stool exams turned in. And the second cohort is a smaller subset of 231 people, or 16% of the initial population that came through our county. This table shows the characteristics of the refugees. We had a little bit more men than women, but roughly equal. The median age was 28. We had fewer children than adults. And in terms of education, approximately half had less than high school education. The year of arrival basically reflects the fact that 2008 was half a year, and 2010 was not quite a full year also, and those were the dates of our study. The region of birth was categorized based on the United Nations geographical categories. Our largest group by far was the Middle East, and that reflects the temporal patterns of refugees coming into the United States during that period of time. And about 54% of our refugees came from the Middle East. This was followed by Southeast Asia, Africa, and South and Central Asia. We had very few people coming in from East Asia, Eastern Europe, South Europe, and South and Central America. This also reflects the fact that some of the refugees didn't necessarily show up at the refugee health assessment clinic, so that has to be taken into consideration. But in terms of the people who participated in the clinic, this is the distribution. In terms of infections, the protozoa prevalence was fairly low, but unchanged from a previous study. It was 10.6%. As we noted before also, Giardia was the most common protozoa infection, so 39% of the protozoan infections. There were 148 different infections and 141 people, indicating that some people had multiple infections. The Entamoeba fragilis was the second, Entamoeba histolytica was the third, and Blastocystis hominis, which is not really symptomatic in most people, was the least common. In terms of helpments, we found that the overall prevalence was actually quite rare, only 34 infections in 31 people. Hookworm was by far the most common one, 38% of them, followed by Strongyloides, Hymenolepsis nana, and Trichoris tuberculosa, or whipworm. We had a little bit, you know, a person with Ascaris, one person with Schistosoma, one person with Chloricus, but overall it was very rare. We found some interesting variation in terms of the regional distribution of the individual intestinal parasites. In this table, across the top are listed the different regions and the individuals who were tested. For protozoa, the top half of the table, the region with the highest prevalence was South and Central Asia, with 27.4%. This is actually quite a big bump from the previous cohort, and it's similar to what's been reported in the literature in terms of the overall prevalence of intestinal parasites. The other regions, Africa, Middle East, and Southeast Asia, all hovered around 10%, which was basically the overall prevalence that we saw among all the refugees. The bottom half of the table, in terms of helpments, you can see that the Middle East essentially had no infections, and the region with the highest infections was Southeast Asia, with 7.8%, which is also not that high compared to previous studies reporting 20, 30, 40% prevalence. And overall, as I mentioned earlier, 2.4 prevalence of helminth infections was very low and unexpected. We examined the risk factors for helminth and protozoan infections, in multivariate analysis using logistic regression. And in the left side of the table, for Hellman's, we found that being male, being from any country or any region other than the Middle East, and also having less than high school education were risk factors for having a Hellman's infection. We also found that if you arrived in 2008 as opposed to later, that was also a risk factor. With regards to protozoa, the only risk factors that sorted themselves out after the multivariate analysis was coming from South and Central Asia. Remember that big 27% prevalence. And also coming into the country, into the U.S. in 2008. And I think the year of arrival is interesting. I mean, in these multivariate analyses, we're basically taking into account region of birth, sex, education, and still when you come into the country makes a difference. And I think this reflects a little bit the temporal trend of the CDC recommendations being first proposed and slowly taking effect. And I think that's very positive. With regards to our previous cohort, you can see that overall prevalence at the bottom of the table, Hellman's have fallen quite a bit from 6.6 to 2.3. I mean, this is fairly rare. And that's true across all geographical regions, Africa, Middle East, South and Central Asia. It all went down, and those were all statistically significant. With regards to protozoa, it was basically unchanged. And if you look at the regions, again, the South and Central Asia was the one with the highest proportion, with 27.4%. We are now looking at individual country data to try to figure out why this bump, and if there's a new country that's being presented, or there's some change or something, so the story continues. Of note, East Asia and Southeast Asia comparisons were not done because of insufficient participants. In fact, East Asians, only 12% of them actually showed up at the clinic after being referred. We also looked at the serology. So the previous results were only on stool exams. And we found that with serology, although OMP only identified two people, serology actually found 52 additional people that were positive, giving a prevalence of 23.4%. And this was similar for schistosoma, which also we had no positive stools and 7.8%. So in conclusion, the prevalence of parasites was low, Hellman's are declining, and routine OMP screen is probably not necessary, but it may be better to do a symptom-driven screen for parasites instead. We don't have any information about symptoms or the actual overseas treatment, so that's a limitation of our study. But we think instead that serologies might be more appropriate. And those are consistent with the CDC recommendations. Some caveats, we have very little information about East Asians who did not show up, and we had very limited data on children, as well as other types of immigrants, and more studies are needed for that. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Gulshan Bhatia, the director of the clinic, Dr. Marisa Ramos, our epidemiologist from the Department of Public Health, and our funding source, which is an NIAID grant to our PI, Julie Parsonet. Thank you.
Thank you.